What is happening, New York Rangers fans? And welcome to episode 88 of the New Ice City podcast. I'm your host, Vincent Mercogliano of the USA Today Network, back in the state of New York following a road trip over the weekend that was quick, but also kind of grueling, required a lot of bouncing around, required a couple time zone changes. So we'll definitely get into all of that and what we saw from the Rangers in the last few games on this week's episode. We also have a guest that I want to make sure I mentioned at the top. It will be Shayna Goldman of The Athletic, who will help us dive into some of the numbers. I really want to have Shayna on because if you look at a lot of the statistics, whether we're talking basic traditional statistics or whether we're talking about more advanced stuff, there's a lot of really encouraging signs for the Rangers through these first 11 games. Of course, it's early. Of course, it's a small sample size, but I still think there's some interesting nuggets to dive into there. So I asked Shayna to come on, and she's going to help us break some of that stuff down on this week's episode and talk about why things seem to be clicking in a lot of different areas for this Rangers team. Now, last week, when I was talking to you from this very same seat on this very same podcast, we were discussing a losing streak. Well, here we are a week later, and things have changed dramatically. Last week, I talked about way too early to panic. There's a lot of things and reasons to believe that would make you think this team was going to turn it around. There was some good stuff happening underneath the surface there. And a lot of that has bubbled to the surface now during this three-game winning streak. Let's rewind it a little bit here. Friday, flew to Dallas. Saturday afternoon, the Rangers played the Stars. Now, that was a game that in the early going felt like it could probably go either way. But by the third period, the Rangers kicked it up a gear, and that really was the start of this good little run that they've been on for them. And they got some contributions in that game in Dallas from some unlikely sources, guys that I think if this team is going to ultimately have the depth that they hope to have, you love to see guys like this stepping up and making key plays in key moments. One of them was Zach Jones, who was coming off of a stretch during which he had been a healthy scratch for back-to-back games in favor of Libor Hájek. We talked about that on last week's episode. A lot of people were wondering why that decision was even made. But Jones, to his credit, I thought this is really interesting, probably the most interesting takeaway from the locker room after that game, was Jones stood up and said, listen, I deserve to get scratched. I think it was the right call. I understand that this is a business, and in order to stay in the lineup, you need to perform well. And I don't think I was performing well enough to do that. So I give him credit for that. Jones has a knack for saying the right thing in these moments and taking that sort of stuff in stride. And what did he do when he got back in the lineup? He had what you could argue was his best game so far this season. And of course, he gets the key goal, his first NHL goal in the third period that gave the Rangers, I believe, a 4-3 lead, and they end up scoring two more after that and winning 6-3. It wasn't the most spectacular goal you're ever going to see. It was a shot from the point that snuck through traffic, but we know and we've heard, especially from Zach Jones's college coach, Greg Carvell at UMass, when he was on the show, that Jones has a pretty good feel for that shot from the point and getting it through traffic and finding the right soft spots in the coverage. So Jones comes through with that goal. Julian Gauthier, another guy who all of a sudden has forced his way into the conversation. He was called up by necessity because the Rangers had Filip Hedl and Vitali Kratsov hurt. So they quite literally needed a body to put in the lineup. So even though it messes with their salary cap situation right now and is doing harm with each passing day to the accrual process that we've talked about so many times, the Rangers needed to call somebody up to plug in the lineup. Well, those guys were hurt. Gauthier was the choice. And now, as crazy as this might sound, he's making it kind of difficult to take him out. Now, we've seen this before with him. We've seen flashes. We've seen a few games that make you think, wow, you might have something here, and then it kind of fades. So we'll see if he can maintain. I did think that the most recent game in Philly, while he had a moment in that game where he basically tried to choke slam a couple of the Flyers players, and I'm sure that it meant a lot in the locker room to see him standing up for his teammates in that way once the Flyers started trying to kind of dirty up the game and get under the Rangers' skin. Gauthier did have that moment. I know there's some GIFs floating around in the internet, but other than that, I didn't think he was quite as effective as far as his play was concerned as he had been in the previous couple games. But on that road trip, once again, he's using that speed to push the pace, and we know that finishing has been a problem for him. But in that Dallas game, he had a highlight reel play that you're not going to see many finishes that are much more compelling than what you saw in that Dallas game, where he essentially blew by a couple of defenders. We know he's capable of doing that for a breakaway. And then when Scott Wedgwood, the Dallas goalie, came out of the net very aggressively to try to play the puck, he kind of tripped Gauthier. Gauthier, while losing his balance, stayed with the puck, and then from a really difficult angle was able to score that goal to make the score 5-3. That was the cushion that the Rangers needed. It felt like that was kind of the nail in the coffin for the Stars. And Gerard Gallant now has brought it up a couple times that Gauthier is opening eyes right now and making it difficult to take him out of the lineup. How long does that last? That remains to be seen, especially now that it looks like Philip Hedel, whether it's Thursday against Boston or over the weekend against the Red Wings, is close to rejoining the lineup. So someone is going to have to come out. But I'm getting kind of curious now. Is it going to be Gauthier, who I think last week would have probably been the obvious choice? Or does he keep Gauthier on that third line, let him play with maybe Philip Hedel and Barclay Gaudreau, for example, which would then push Jimmy Vesey down to the fourth line, and then somebody has to come out? I think maybe the most obvious candidates right now are Ryan Reeves, who was actually a scratch in Dallas, although we know Gallant doesn't like taking him out of the lineup. Or maybe it could be Ryan Carpenter, who, quite frankly, I don't think has had too many memorable moments so far besides that skate cut in his Rangers career. It's early, of course, and it does help that he plays center and kills penalties. But you have the option of putting Barclay Gaudreau as your fourth-line center once Hedel comes back and is centering the third line. So Carpenter is a guy that it wouldn't shock me to maybe see get a healthy scratch coming up once Hedel's back as well. So interesting little decision there for Gallant to make. But as far as his top six is concerned, he does not look like he plans on touching that right now, and that is absolutely the right call. And then you hope that Hedel coming back into the lineup will give that bottom six a bit of an offensive boost. Then, I got a little sidetracked here, but I want to move on from Dallas to that game in Arizona. And the biggest takeaway from that game in Arizona was, of course, the arena itself, Mullet Arena, which is nestled right in the heart of that Arizona State University campus. It was my first time being on that campus. It was a really cool scene to be there for that. I was really glad I was on this trip and was able to experience that. Now, for a team that has the prospect of playing 41 home games in that arena, which is the situation the Coyotes are in, I could see it maybe getting a little old. I could see the charm wearing off. You know, the size of the arena it's very intimate. It's pretty cool to experience, but it feels kind of like a minor league operation. It reminds me of early on in my career when a minor league baseball team called the Rockland Boulders first started, and I covered, I don't know, a couple dozen probably of their games in their first few seasons. Felt a little bit like being at a minor league baseball game, a little amateurish. There are things about the arena that I think will get old. The concessions are really pretty limited. The bathroom lines seem to get pretty long pretty quick. But if you just enjoy watching hockey, you're not going to get too many opportunities to see an NHL game up that close. There is quite literally not a bad seat in the house. And the press box, the setup for the press box, it wasn't much of a, I don't think you could even call it a press box. It was like a long counter with these high chairs and one electrical outlet per seat. So resources there were pretty limited, but you were right in with the crowd. I mean, the guy standing in front of Colin Stevenson from Newsday, you guys know Colin, you've heard him on the show before. The guy in front of Colin was like 6'7". So every time that guy got excited and stood up, poor Colin, who like me isn't the tallest guy around, kept getting his view blocked. And the guy was in front of me in certain angles as well. So not ideal from that standpoint, but you really felt the energy of the arena sitting in those seats. And it was also really cool to meet a lot of you. I can't tell you how many people came up to me and mentioned not just the coverage, but probably more than anything else, people were mentioning the podcast. So shout out to the New Ice City listeners who were in the building at Mullet Arena on Sunday. And shout out to the Rangers fans, because everywhere we go, you guys do seem to travel really well. But this, more than probably any road game I've seen, as far as the percentage is concerned, was overwhelmingly Rangers fans. I mean, there was way more blue in those stands than, I don't know, whatever you call the colors that the Coyotes wear. It was loud for the Rangers. The Let's Go Rangers chants were louder than the Let's Go Coyotes chants. There was a couple Pot Van Sucks chants. It was just really loud every time the Rangers would do something good, obviously when the goals were scored. So very, very cool experience to be there for that. Again, would I want to do 41 games there? Probably not. And I think the players would tell you the same thing. But the Rangers guys at least told us that as far as the conditions to play that were concerned, the ice, the boards, the things that are important, they felt like that was all top-notch. The locker room, yeah, they had some complaints about that. And I think, you know, playing in front of that few people when you're used to quadruple that amount might get old eventually. But I do think the players enjoyed it, and I can definitely tell you that I enjoyed it as well. And then you're able to walk off campus, and there's some good restaurants and bars and stuff right there that you can go to. So if you guys are thinking about a trip, the Rangers aren't going to be back there this year, but the Coyotes will play there again next year. Could be a cool option. And if you like golf, a lot of good golf courses out there. The weather's beautiful, so there are definitely worse places to go. As for the game itself, the Rangers, listen, legs were heavy, coming off of a back-to-back, lot of time on planes over the weekend, but they dug deep. They played well enough to win. They took on the one little push that the Coyotes made, and they responded. Artemi Panarin finished with 3 points. He had a point on all three Rangers goals. Good way to celebrate his 31st birthday. I definitely had some fun with him after the game. I went up to him and asked if he wanted 3 points for his birthday, and he smiled. He knew what I was getting at, and he's like, no, you know, I'm a good guy. I wanted a team win. That's what I really wanted for my birthday. But then he winked at me too, so I think he appreciated getting those 3 points as well. He was joking about him turning 31, and Igor Shesterkin before the game made a comment to him that the 31 is a good age, because obviously we all know that Igor wears number 31. He was joking about Alexis Lafreniere, who finished a really, really picture-perfect pass from Panarin for the first goal of the game. He said that if Lafreniere would not have finished that play, that it would have, quote, broken our relationship. So Panarin was in rare – no, I shouldn't say rare form. He's always pretty funny, but he was really funny that night, and he was definitely the star of the game for the Rangers. The power play also showed up in a big way over the weekend after they had been in a little funk. They had been 1-for-17, and then they went 3-for-5 over a stretch between the two games. So a lot of things went well for the Rangers. They played Igor Shesterkin for back-to-back starts for the first time since Igor's rookie year, believe it or not. First time Gerard Gallant had done that. It felt like a little bit of an unusual decision, I guess I would say, because if you're going to pull that card, wouldn't you more likely do it for a really high-quality team in the second game of a back-to-back, not a team like the Coyotes, who, as we know, is one of the bottom feeders in the NHL? But I think Gallant wanted to try it, see how Igor responded, and that way he has it maybe in his back pocket to try again somewhere down the line. I do think that even though Gallant was saying that he thought they were playing well during that four-game losing streak, and in some respects they were, in a lot of respects they were, I should say, he wanted to stack wins. He wanted to jump on the opportunity to grab a couple wins and get momentum back in the Rangers' favor. And he knew that Arizona presented a very winnable game, and he wanted to make sure that they locked it down. And so I think that that was a big motivation for them as well, to play Igor in the back-to-back games. And then the Rangers come home. They host the Philadelphia Flyers on Tuesday, who surprisingly came into town with a pretty good-looking record, but they're banged up right now. I don't think they have a very great team to begin with. And they basically have been gutting their way through these games. They're clogging up the middle of the ice. They're, I don't know if you want to call it dirty, but they're definitely trying to be physical, trying to intimidate teams a little bit, trying to be a little bit of a bully. And the Rangers were simply having none of it. That was maybe, to me, the most lopsided 1-0 game I have ever seen. The Rangers only get the one goal. Chris Kreider finishes it on a breakaway in overtime. But anybody who watched the game know they dominated that game. They hit the post 4 different times in regulation. They also forced Carter Hart to make 35 saves. Hart, although he got beat on those shots that hit the post, I thought made some really high-quality saves in there as well. And the Rangers just kept coming. They never seemed to get discouraged. They never seemed to get frustrated. Chris Kreider made the point after the game of saying, you know, there are times when we're creating good chances, we're not scoring, and we get frustrated, and we start to push a little too hard, get a little too loose, and then all of a sudden we are vulnerable on the back end, and we're giving up odd man rushes the other way because we're turning the puck over. They didn't do that. They didn't fall into that trap. They played really solid defense the whole night, but they kept coming in waves. I mean, especially those top two lines, they were just creating one scoring chance after another. I think the scoring chance for the game, it was like 43-15 in total, according to Natural Stat Trick, when I looked on Tuesday night. So the Rangers thoroughly dominated that game, and they end up getting the 2 points, which they absolutely earned and deserved in that game. The Chris Kreider finish was somewhat poetic because he had a breakaway earlier in the game that hit the post. And so Gerard Gallant, actually after the game, this was a kind of funny moment as well, said that he watched Kreider's first breakaway attempt that hit the post. And so when Kreider had the second breakaway attempt, because of superstition or nerves or whatever, he turned away and looked at the stand. So he didn't even watch the play. He just waited for the goal horn, and then he heard it. So he basically said that might be his new thing now moving forward, is when a breakaway happens, he's going to look away because it's kind of a superstitious thing now. So that was pretty funny after the game. But again, really have to feel good about the way that the Rangers are playing. And now they get a really big test on Thursday night when the Boston Bruins come into town. The Bruins are red hot right now. They have the best record in the Eastern Conference, tied for the best record in the entire league. We know how dangerous they can be, and they certainly seem to be clicking early in the season. So this will be a good test for the Rangers, who are feeling really good about themselves and will continue to ride Igor Shesterkin. Gallant confirmed after practice today on Wednesday that he will give Igor the start once again against the Bruins, which should come as no surprise. That's absolutely a start that you want your best goalie in the net for. Will the Rangers have Philip Hedel? It sounds like it's a possibility. He's still coming off of that upper body injury that we suspect is a head injury after he took that shoulder to the head from Cole Sillinger against the Columbus Blue Jackets. At this point, it was about a week and a half ago. He returned to practice on Friday, actually, before the Rangers left for Dallas. But you could see he wasn't quite right. He didn't make it through practice. I think they were like, listen, we should not rush this guy. If he's not feeling right, which Gallant said is what Hedel told him, then get him off the ice, let him rest more, especially if it was a concussion. I don't want to assume it was a concussion, but I think there are reasons to believe it was a concussion. You got to be very careful with that. But he did practice in full contact and everything on Wednesday. And Gallant said they'll make the determination on Thursday whether or not he's going to play against the Bruins. So Hedel is definitely close. And again, that will put the Rangers in a situation where they have to make a lineup decision. Who comes out? Is it Gauthier? Is it Reeves? Is it Carpenter? Maybe it's Vesey. if it were me, I think at this point I would maybe even lean toward Carpenter. I think you can play Gaudreau on your fourth line and drop Carpenter out of the lineup. But if not Carpenter, it wouldn't shock me if it's Ryan Reeves again as well. We'll see which way Gallant goes with that decision. Vitali Kratsov, on the other hand, he is a little more of a ways away. The Rangers have said he will not return until after the weekend. So earliest will be sometime next week. I don't know exactly what the injury is. He sustained it in Dallas, where he really took a pretty scary hit along the boards. It was a little bit reckless on his part. He was doing the right thing. He was trying to chase down a loose puck as hard as he possibly could, but he kind of lunged himself at it and put himself in a vulnerable position where when he got hit inevitably by a bigger player, his head was basically between the player and the boards, and he ends up going down. Looked like, I don't know if he was out cold for a second or just stunned, but he was down on the ice for a little while, came right off, and has not returned since then. I did see him in Arizona, and it looks like he either has a really badly bruised nose or a broken nose. So he definitely has some kind of a nose injury going on, but it seems like it's more than that. Could be possibly another head injury, which would be pretty scary because he already had a head injury to start the season. And getting back a little bit to the conversation that we had on last week's episode, I asked Gerard Gallant about whether or not Kratsov needs to get better, needs to learn more about how to protect himself in situations like that so that he's not getting hurt all the time. And Gallant basically said, yeah, you know, he did think that he was a little reckless in that spot and didn't make the smartest decision. And while he said, listen, I want my guys aggressively going after pucks, and I respect and appreciate that he was trying to do that in that situation, you got to be smart about picking your spots. You got to know when you're going to look for contact and engage physically and when maybe there's another way to approach it so that you don't unnecessarily risk injury, especially in a situation like that where the possibility of coming away with that puck the way that he threw himself in there was probably pretty low. So it's all part of the learning curve, and it's going to be tough for him, especially as a guy who just hasn't played enough in the past year to really work on these types of things. So he's going to be out for a little while longer. Don't expect to see him in any of the next couple games. So with that, let's kick it over to our interview with Shayna. And then after that, I will be back to answer some of your Twitter questions. Now let's welcome back into the show one of our favorite guests to dive into the numbers. We'll talk some analytics. We'll talk some Rangers. That, of course, would be Shayna Goldman of The Athletic, also one of the co-hosts for the Too Many Men podcast. So Shayna, first visit of the season. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. I appreciate you doing it. Also appreciate you doing it on short notice. Very much. I owe you a favor somewhere down the line. So don't be shy about cashing in on that one. But I have been thinking about numbers surrounding the Rangers in particular lately, because it's been kind of odd. In some ways, to me, it's been the opposite of what we saw last year, where when you looked at some of whether they're the advanced quote unquote stats or even like general stats, like shots on goal, the Rangers were generally a team last year that was on the short end of the stick as far as what they were generating versus what their opponents were generating. And of course, Igor Shesterkin, we know, had an historic season and carried them. And then they eventually found their footing and played well at the end of the season and carried that into the playoffs. This year, the goaltending has been solid. I don't think it's quite been at the level that it was last year. It's still very early, obviously, but you look at a lot of those numbers, whether we're talking shots, whether we're talking scoring chances, whether we're talking about expected goals, the Rangers actually look good in a lot of those categories. So I wanted to hear from you, Shane, about what's your read through the first 10, 11 games of the season on what these Rangers are doing well and maybe not so well and you know, maybe different compared to last year.
So when we're working with small samples, it's always a little bit tricky because one game can literally change everything. And, you know, they opened up the season with these dynamic 5-on-5 games, and then they did kind of fall off a little bit, but they've really found their footing in the middle. So that middle for them is as a top five team at 5-on-5, which who knew it was possible? The Rangers of the last decade, of the analytics era since 2007, 2008, have never been that strong at 5-on-5. If they had the offense, the defense was missing, or vice versa. And right now, it's a very balanced attack for them. Like, they rate well in the shots they're generating. They rate well in the shot quality. And then they rate well on the other side of the ice. And obviously, there's some weaknesses in the lineup, like, you know, the higher end players are the ones who are really carrying this. And there are some issues, you know, lower in the lineup up front and on defense. But, you know, generally speaking, they're playing so well at 5-on-5, which is a good starting point for the season. It obviously can change in another 10 games. They can be a bottom five team. You really never know what's going to happen. But it's a good foundation for them to start on. And it's something they really didn't have last year. So it's more encouraging to see that the numbers are, you know, pretty balanced for them on both ends of the ice. The only thing that's really missing, the goaltending, like you said, it's been fine. It hasn't been otherworldly, but we know it can get there. It's pretty obvious. Most would say Shesterkin was going to regress, but his regression is still elite, so it's fine. It's their shooting percentage that's pretty low. You know, it's a bottom five, you know, on ice shooting percentage at 5-on-5. So they don't have the results just yet. And you could see that with the fact that they have, you know, a 57% expected goals rate, and their actual goals rate, I think, is around 48%. It's a bit of a gap there, but that's something that, you know, what goes up tends to come down and vice versa. So that should balance out as well. And then the results should keep coming as long as they don't change too much below the surface.
Yeah, the shooting percentage is really interesting, because last I think when I wrote my pregame story before the Flyers game, they were 28th in the league in shooting percentage. They were at, I want to say it was 8-point-something%, and last year they were over 10%. Now, that 2% might not sound like a huge difference, but when you average that out over hundreds of shots, it does make a pretty significant difference. So the shooting percentage thing to you, is that something that inevitably, with the quality of the scoring chances that they're creating, should come around? Or do you feel like maybe there are signs that the finishing, for whatever reason, isn't as good as it was last year?
No, I think the finishing's still there. I think the shooting now, it's like 6.7%. I think the only teams worse, I know Colorado, St. Louis are two of the teams that rank worse than the Rangers. And they're teams you don't expect to be there. But that's the thing with shooting percentages. We see it with individual players. The same thing applies to teams. We might see someone shoot at 20% and their average is closer to 11. It will drop down. Unfortunately, for some teams and players, it drops down so drastically. Like, a prime example of that would be someone like Evan Rodriguez last year on Pittsburgh. His shooting percentage was so high in the beginning of the year. He was shooting at such a high clip. It was so impressive. The second half of the year was pretty terrible for him, and his shooting percentage was absolutely down in the dumps because it averaged out in the end, but those highs and low spikes can be tricky. Is that going to be the case for the Rangers? Not necessarily. It might just bounce back soon. It's only been a handful of games, so it's nothing really to like sound the alarms about yet. But generally speaking, it'll get back to that average. We know they have the finishing talent. And if anything, it seems like they're getting a little bit more from their top six than they did pre-deadline last year. That should help that shooting percentage bounce back anyway. Like, the foundation's there below the surface with their shot generation, with their expected goal generation, especially in the top six. Having a player like Hedl back on the third line, I think that'll help to get everything going. So now it's more of the top nine, not just the top six we're talking about.
One of the guys who's really interesting is Kreider, because he never regressed. He never really averaged out last year. I think his shooting percentage for the season ended up over 20%. He ends up with 52 goals. Now, he's a guy who, he did end up getting that breakaway goal to win against the Flyers, but he's a guy who it felt like maybe last year got a little bit lucky with how high that shooting percentage was. And now it feels like he started the season kind of unlucky, and maybe he'll end up finding somewhere in the middle as well.
Yeah, I would bet that. And I think last year, a big reason for, and it's not to take away from his accomplishments, because I feel like every time anyone talks about Kreider, it's like, oh, we can't believe he hit that, or it's not sustainable. Like, it's a huge accomplishment. But I think a big reason he reached the heights he did was the power play, like offensive generation. They were shooting the puck at such a high rate, something that they weren't doing before. And he was finishing off those shots. So, you know, it was lucky some of them were coming off his stick, and it's a skill that he was able to do that. This year, you know, the power play looks a bit different, and Zibanejad's shots are going clear through, and Vinny Trocheck is a lot more willing to shoot the puck from the slot too, and his shots are reaching the goal too. So it's a little bit less for Kreider to do with his stick, even though his presence in front of the net is so important. It always has been. But, you know, if you're not the one touching it at the end, you're not going to get the goal or the shot credit. But this year, I think that, you know, he's in a good position to succeed, because last year we saw that top line with Zibanejad get kind of crushed at 5-on-5 a bit. And it feels like this year it's going to look a lot different with Kako there. They're out possessing their opponents. They're generating the shots. They're generating the chances. So I think the scoring will come, and it's going to come for him as well as his line mates. So I think he'll be fine. But I wonder if this year his offensive contributions are going to be more than his shot. At even strength last year, a lot of it was his shot. You know, it was Zibanejad setting him up more often, which we saw kind of sink his shot totals a little bit, but like not in a bad way, just making him more of a dual threat. And it was Zibanejad carrying the puck in a little bit more. But if Kreider kicks in more contributions, I think that's going to help in the long run more anyway, because we know it's not sustainable to only be the shooter on the line. You know, it helps to have dimension from each of the three players, and it feels like they're going to have that this year.
Yeah, that line to me has been really impressive lately. If you look, obviously, I think eye test wise, they look great. I was actually talking to Kako today about how much more confident he looks on the puck, how strong he looks on the puck, how he's able to just fight off defenders and carry it through traffic. To me, it feels like some numbers are definitely coming for him pretty soon. But that line as a whole, like I like to look at the reports after the game sometimes. And in that Philly game, they generated 15 scoring chances and only allowed two. And there's been a handful of games recently where the difference has been jarring. I think in Dallas, it was like 14-1 or something like that. So that line, even though they haven't put in a ton of goals yet, it feels like the chances have absolutely been there. And it feels like the top six as currently constructed, because we know how dynamic Panarin is, one of the leading scorers in the league so far. Trocheck looks like a good fit, who's getting more and more comfortable. And Lafreniere, I thought, was one of the best players on the ice in that game against the Flyers. So the way that top six has come together, I think a lot of us thought that maybe it would be Lafreniere with Mika and Kreider, and then Kako with Panarin and Trocheck, because that was more of the alignment last year. But with those guys where they're at right now, what do you make of how it's looked and what you're seeing from the numbers?
So on the top line with Zibanejad, like that line you were mentioning, how good they looked and the scoring chances they're generating, you know, they're expected to score, it's like 4.6 goals per 60, and they're getting less than two for all of that. They're the line with one of the worst shooting percentages of anyone. So the chances are coming, the scoring will definitely be there soon if they could stop hitting posts and just get a little bit of puck luck, because that's what it comes down to at the end of the day. Like, as much as we can break it down, it's a game where players are flying around the ice with knives on their boots, you know, shooting frozen pucks. You need a little bit of luck too. But the top six construction, I think it's a good thing too that it's not Lafreniere in the first line right now, because the Rangers know that works. They learned that last year and they weren't as willing to take risks and change it up. And this year, you know, obviously they've gone with combinations. They figured out what's worked and they're keeping with it. But in their back pocket, they do have that option. They know if Lafreniere and, you know, Panarin for some reason don't continue to click, that they could easily flip the two, you know, right wings and have another, you know, another look at the top six. It's that versatility that any team should want to have. But right now it's working really well because, you know, playing on the right side really seems to suit Lafreniere. He's playing really well with Panarin and he looks way more confident too. And that line is generating a lot as well. They're one of the Rangers' best lines on both ends of the ice, and they're going to get, you know, slightly softer matchups anyway. Top defenders might go up against Panarin. It's going to be really interesting to see as the year progresses who they target more. Will it be Zibanejad or will it be Panarin? But the Zibanejad line is the one that's going to take on, you know, top forward competition. So it might give Panarin's lineup a little bit more room to play to their strengths, with which we've seen so far. And I think a big reason, you know, we're seeing that line thrive is not just like the matchup game, but Panarin looks like a different player 5-on-5. He looks like the player we saw his first couple of years and we didn't really see last year until the deadline. You know, there's that jump in his step. There's, you know, the evasiveness we know he has. There's that strength on the puck. There's the creativity. So it all just seems to be working for him. And that, you know, is definitely infectious on the rest of the line. But overall, it's nice that the Rangers have a nice balanced top six, and it doesn't feel like the team's too top heavy, which we've seen before. And it just feels like, it, you know, they're clicking right now at such a, like an encouraging rate that there is like a sustainability factor that I think that they can look forward to moving forward.
Yeah, a couple things that have struck me about the decisions that they made with Kako being on the top line and Lafreniere being on the second line. Kako, I think that they view as a better defensive player right now, and they want that out of the top line because, as you mentioned, the top line is often going to get the matchup against the other team's top line. That's the line that Gallant's going to want out there in all key situations, including defensive situations. Whereas Lafreniere on that line with Panarin, with Kreider on Kako's line, Kreider's a guy that you know is going to work around the net a lot. And so they don't really need a guy who's going to do that. They do like Lafreniere at the net front. We've seen him doing that on the second power play unit. And that's what Gallant has talked a lot about wanting him to do with Panarin. Let Panarin work the perimeter and let Lafreniere be the guy who gets inside. So you can kind of see the thinking behind some of these decisions. And as you touched on, I mean, all the numbers are really encouraging. It feels like more goals are coming for those guys. And I feel like the two young guys in particular are playing with a lot of confidence right now. But there's one other thing you touched on I want to circle back on. It's in large part due to that top six, but the 5-on-5 play, that was considered a weakness for this team. They were considered reliant on goaltending, and the power play, as we know, is dynamic, which it remains so. But the 5-on-5 play for this team has really been improved, and I'm curious if there are specific reasons you can point to as to why you think we've seen that so far in this season.
I think some of it's lineup balance. I think last year they tried so hard to figure out combinations that they thought worked and maybe got the results, but didn't have the numbers below the surface. And they kind of rode them to death. I think the prime example of that would probably be Panarin's line. Like, you could see, it felt like last year was Strome's worst two-way year. You know, he was very good offensively, but, you know, his defensive game wasn't as strong as it had been in years past. And that third person on the line, they really struggled to find. And they looked for defensive players who didn't necessarily keep up offensively. Like, you can easily become a defensive weight on a line. You have to be a player that can complement, you know, the offensive players and keep up with them. So it does feel like they figured that out with, you know, Lafreniere right now. So that's, you know, a good sign. And I think Trocheck's a better rounded center for that combination. So that's helping keep them afloat instead of that line getting caved back in their own zone and constantly having to pull themselves out of the defensive zone, go for a quick rush, and then find their way back. So they're sustaining pressure a lot better. They're finding ways to have complementary skill sets that are actually working for them. You know, it's Kako's possession game that's obviously helping. So it's not as rush based for the Rangers. This is a team that really hasn't been good off the cycle in years. And it seems like finally their top six is getting there. And it helps the defense too, is very active. A player like Keandre Miller is stepping up and jumping into the offense a little bit more. We saw that late in the year. He was probably the most improved player on the Rangers in the second half of the season. And, you know, we're seeing Fox and Lindgren continue to play to their strengths. They were a pair last year that were very good, but not to the degree that we even know them to be. The year before was, you know, that much better. So to get them off to a good start definitely helps as well. And the third pair having some stability at times, that Jones-Schneider pairing, I think, is the better one that they've had so far. You know, they're not a black hole for offense anymore, and they're a bit better defensively than it was with Nemeth on that pairing. So it's tweaks all around that are definitely helping, but there's still work to be done in that bottom six to up front to really like stabilize the 5-on-5 game consistently throughout the lineup. But if that's the biggest problem you have, it, you know, it's a much better thing than the Rangers of recent years.
Yeah, absolutely. The bottom six, I think, is maybe one of the final pieces to the puzzle here, especially the third line. You feel like with the fourth line, they'll be able to figure it out. But if you could add more depth on the third line, maybe push some guys down to the fourth, that makes the whole lineup look deeper. Obviously, Philip Hedel coming back will be huge for that. Hedel, to me, looked dynamic in the first five games, much like Lafreniere and Kako. It feels like he is ready to take a step this year. So having him there gives you a legitimate offensive threat in the bottom six, because right now they really don't have that. Kratsov could be a little bit longer. Julian Gauthier, we see the flashes, but we kind of aren't sure how long he's going to sustain that. It's like, we've kind of seen this before. And I do ultimately believe that they will address a top nine type forward. I don't know if it's going to be top six. I don't know if they're going to be able to afford that, but I do think a top nine / third line forward is something they're going to be hunting for once the deadline comes around. So there's still room for improvement there. But I think all in all, I mean, based on what I'm hearing from you, based on what I'm watching and seeing and reading myself, it seems like there's a lot to be encouraged about right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Like last year, the big difference was the deadline was crucial for them. It was something that they needed to keep their heads above water to really compete in the playoffs because they were missing so many pieces. This time around, it feels like if they can keep this up, and like it's still keeping it in stride, there's still a lot of season to play. But if this is, you know, the sign of what's to come, then it's finding complementary pieces to strengthen them instead of legitimately boost them as much as they needed last year. And I think that's a lot more sustainable for them. That's something that should help in the long run. You know, if we're talking about it last year, they needed pieces to support them and look how far they went. If they already have the support and they can just get, you know, sprinkle in a little bit more skill, I think that should, you know, go leaps and bounds, because we know they have the dynamic power play. We know they have a strong penalty kill. We know they have goaltending. You know, it's just rounding out the edges. So it would be, it's a big difference if they can keep up at this rate versus where they were last year.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Shanna, thank you so much. I really, really do appreciate it. Make sure to check her out at The Athletic and listen to Too Many Men. Anything else you got coming up, Shanna? You want to plug on the way out here?
Yeah. I have fantasy columns coming out every Friday, and I'll have something about what is the best defense, you know, is offense really the best defense, coming out next week, that I'm excited about.
Cool. Very cool. We'll definitely be looking out for that. And like I said, I owe you one. So let me know when I can repay the favor.
Thanks for having me today.
And we're back. Thanks to Shayna again for taking some time today on short notice. I'll be honest with you guys, I actually had another guest lined up. I had been planning Shayna for roughly the quarter point of the season. I wanted to dive into some of the numbers with her, but when this guest that I had lined up had to postpone for today, I quickly reached out to Shayna because, in truth, I was very interested in talking about the numbers. I had actually written about a lot of that stuff prior to the game against Philly to go along with my lineup post that day. So I was planning on going into that stuff on my own at some point in the podcast, but when my other guest had to postpone, reached out to Shayna really quick because I figured that would be a really interesting pivot and that would be a good topic that I wanted to address already anyway. And she was the best because she was ready to go and jumped right on and made time for me on very short notice. So I really, really appreciate that. Big shout out to Shayna. So with that, let's move on and get to your Twitter questions for the week. We had quite a few come in, and I'm actually going to start by combining two. There was a handful of questions that were related to this topic, but I thought that these two hit on a couple different angles that I wanted to address. So we'll start with Nicholas Jans, who wrote, "When Hedl and Kratsov come back from injury, do you think Gauthier is being sent down, or do you think he has found a spot on this team?" And then Eric Voss wrote, "With the preferred cap space closer to $1 million for deadline accrual and emergence of Gauthier, do you see possibly VC or Carpenter being waived, or consideration to Reeves or Sammy Blais being traded?" So this is a situation with a few different moving parts that we have to keep our eye on in the next week. The main thing to know here is that Julien Gauthier first passed through waivers on October 10th. Now that date is important because the NHL rule states, as far as waivers are concerned, that once you have played either 10 NHL games or 30 days have passed, you would then be required to clear waivers again. But if you come up to the NHL and are sent back down within that 10 game or 30 day window, then you do not have to pass through waivers again. So essentially, if the Rangers are going to send Gauthier down and they want to do it without risking exposing him again, they have to do it soon. In his case, the 30-day marker will come up before the 10-game marker. He's only played 4 games. He's roughly a week away from that 30-day window expiring. So by about this time next week, the Rangers are going to have to make some kind of decision on him, I believe. Do you send him down so that you don't have to risk the waiver thing again with him? Or is he playing well enough to where you hold on to him? Or are the injuries substantial enough to where you feel it's necessary to hold on to him? But if you're going to send him down at any point, you probably want to do it within the next week, because otherwise you're going to have to do this waiver tap dance again. And given the little bits of success that we've seen him have and the little jolt that he's provided for the Rangers in these first four games that he's played with them, you could see a scenario where another team's interest is piqued. We've talked about this a bunch of times with him, but there's a skill set there that is intriguing. And that's why I don't think if you did have to put him on waivers, it's a foregone conclusion that he would make it through again. He could get claimed. And after losing Dryden Hunt to the Colorado Avalanche, are the Rangers willing to risk taking another hit to their depth? I would lean toward no. At this point, I would think that at some point in the next week, probably after the Sunday game against Detroit, if I had to guess, we'll hear about Gauthier being sent back down. Now, there's two more games before I think this decision needs to be made. They might even be able to stretch it for three more games. But again, this decision has to be made within 30 days of October 10th if he's not going to have to go through waivers again. If he plays really well against Boston and then plays really well again on Sunday against Detroit, could he force the Rangers' hand? I think if he's earned it, if he's played well enough and you want to do the right thing for your team and do the right thing for the player, then you have to consider other options. You have to rethink that plan. But as Eric pointed out, we know it's a priority for the Rangers to accrue as much cap space as possible. And right now, because they're carrying a full 23-man roster, they're not doing themselves a service as far as accruing that cap space. Right now, they're still on that pace for around $800,000 in cap space. They have not spent as many days as they would ideally like with a 22-man roster. As we've talked about before, a 22-man roster would put them on pace to accrue around $4 million in cap space by the time the trade deadline comes around. But if they stick with 23 for too long, in fact, every day that they stick with 23, they're cutting into that a little bit more. So it would behoove them to get to 22 as soon as possible. And I do believe that they want to do that. The holdup, of course, right now is the injury situation. Filip Hedl hasn't been able to play in a week and a half. And now Vitali Kratsov is out for what we're told is about another week at a minimum. So even though you've got a 23-man roster right now, you only have 12 healthy forwards. So it's a necessity to have Gauthier on the roster right now. But if Hedl returns on Thursday and you get through the weekend and things are looking good with him, well, then you're back to having an extra forward, and then you could consider sending Gauthier or someone else down. The problem with sending somebody else down is that pretty much anybody else on this roster will require waivers. And I don't know if I see an obvious candidate as an alternative to Gauthier. Ryan Reeves, as we've talked about, is not going anywhere. I think you're going to see him as a scratch every so often. Could even be a stretch where he's scratched for multiple games in a row. But the Rangers value his presence too much. Gerard Gallant respects him too much. He's too much of an important locker room guy for them. I do not think you're going to see him put on waivers. The next most logical options I think Eric touched on would be Carpenter or Vesey. I just don't know if I see the Rangers doing it. Vesey earned that contract in camp. He earned a roster spot, and I don't think at this stage they're going to take that away from him. And Carpenter, while I don't think he's been very impressive, I think you, in a lot of ways, would be better off with Barclay Gaudreau as your fourth-line center. I certainly think you get more out of Gaudreau than you do out of Carpenter. Because Carpenter plays center, I think the Rangers are going to want to keep somebody else around on the roster who's capable of playing in the middle, because as we see right now, with Hedl being out, that forces you to play Gaudreau on the third line. And then if you didn't have Carpenter, you would have nobody that can play center on the fourth line. So Carpenter maybe feels like the most logical next choice, but again, you're leaving yourself thin at the center position if you send him down. So my guess at this point, before we see how the next couple games go, which I think could change things, but my guess at this point would be that Gauthier probably gets sent back down sometime in the next week before that waivers clock expires and you'd have to expose him again. But it's an interesting dilemma. I think at the end of the day, the priority needs to be getting down to 22 men again. That way you can get back on that accrual pace that you want it to be at so that you can give yourself some financial wiggle room at the trade deadline. I think that has to be at the top of the priority list or very near the top of the priority list. But right now, these injuries kind of have things in flux. You got to see if Hedl can return and look okay and you feel confident about him being able to maintain his spot in the lineup, because then that would give you 13 healthy forwards and you could hypothetically send one down, although you don't have much depth then in case of an emergency or in case you need to plug somebody else in. Ideally, you get Kratsov back sometime soon as well. But again, we don't know the specifics of his injury. We don't know exactly how long he is going to be out. So it's a delicate, interesting position for the Rangers. There isn't really a great answer no matter which way you slice it. But the only person right now that you know you can send down, as long as you do it in the next week, without exposing them to waivers, is Gauthier. So if you want to protect your depth while getting back on the salary cap accrual pace that you want to be at, really the only answer at this point would be Gauthier. Because putting guys on IR isn't going to help you as far as the salary cap concerned. A conditioning stint, which I know has been thrown out there as a possibility for Kratsov, you would still have to pay him. He would still count against your salary cap. So that does nothing to help you from a salary cap perspective. So if you want to get back to 22 men, you got to send somebody down to Hartford, not on a conditioning stint, on an actual assignment. And the only guy you can do that to right now that wouldn't require waivers, at least for another week, is Gauthier. So interesting situation to keep an eye on. We'll see how the Rangers choose to play it. I think we'll find an answer sometime in the next week. All right. Let's get to our next question, which comes from Who Is Donnie, who wrote, with Turk continuing to tinker at times with the D pairings, including last night, meaning the Tuesday night game against Philly, do you think he'll consider any long-term changes? Also, with yet another brutal Trouba power play turnover last night, is there any chance they finally take him off power play too so he can focus on his strengths instead? As far as the D pairs go, Donnie, I don't really see it happening. I think you can see it within games. Obviously, the most glaring example of that came in Dallas when the Trouba-Miller pair had a pretty rough game. They finished -3 in that one. And what we saw in the third period was Gallant broke them up. He had Miller playing with Braden Schneider, and he had Trouba playing with Zach Jones. So that separated a pair that was struggling a bit in Miller and Trouba. And it also, as Gallant pointed out, and I think this was maybe one of his main motivating factors, is it spread out the experience so that you didn't have the two really young guys in Schneider and Jones, even though Miller's about the same age as them. But as far as experience goes, the less experienced guys, he liked separating them as well. So I think within games, you could see him go to that. He admitted as much, but I asked him actually right after that game, is this something that you would entertain doing on a more permanent basis? And he basically said no. And I think that's true. The Rangers have been reluctant to change these D pairs for a couple years now. They really like the way that they mesh. There's a chemistry both on and off the ice when you talk about Fox and Lindgren, when you talk about Miller and Trouba, and even when you talk about Schneider and Jones. Those two guys have been spending a lot of time together off the ice from what I can tell. So I think they are trying to keep those guys together. I think they like the way that those guys mesh. You don't want to overreact to a bad game from Trouba and Miller. And listen, admittedly, there have been other moments. Like I do admit that Trouba has had some turnovers that have hurt them in certain spots, but they loved the way that that pair worked together last year. Miller has repeatedly praised Trouba for how much he's helped him grow, how comfortable he feels with him on the ice. I know it's easy to discount that and just draw things up on paper that you think might look better, but I do think that the guys in the locker room want those pairs to remain the same, and that's going to carry weight with Gallant. I thought the Fox-Lindgren pair in particular looked really good in the game against Philly. I thought that was the Rangers' best pair in that game, and they've been off to an encouraging start this season. So I don't think you're going to see any changes made beyond a period here, a period there, when maybe he feels like he needs to shake things up. It's good that he's got a plan B and that he's shown that he's willing to go to that in certain games, but I think it's too early to make a move where you sever these relationships and these pairs where you've had chemistry building for years now. I do not see that in the plans for the Rangers, at least any time in the near future. As far as Trouba coming off power play too, so that he can focus on his strengths, listen, you've got other options there. Obviously, we know that Zach Jones is more than capable of running the point on a power play. That's one of his strengths. Keandre Miller's another guy you could argue that you'd like to see get some power play time at some point. But the thing is, the way that power play two is currently constructed, there's all left-handed shots on there when you talk about Lafreniere, when you talk about Kako, obviously with Hedl likely to return, and then with Jones occupying a spot on there. So if you made, let's say, Keandre the fifth guy, you'd have five left-handed shots. Now, we've seen people make a big fuss out of the top unit having four right-handed shots and then being two right-handed. They still have Kreider on that unit as a lefty shot. Would you really want to move your power play two to a spot where it's five left-handed shots? I don't know if that makes a whole lot of sense, and I know that Gallant likes having at least the threat of Trouba and his big right-handed shot pounding pucks from the point. So for that reason, I kind of don't think I see it changing. I think if you had a good offensive, skilled right-handed option who could fill in there, you would certainly consider it. I think that that would make sense to maybe back off on Trouba's workload, let him focus on 5-on-5, let him focus on PK. But I think right now, because of the way that the roster is built, and because you're certainly not going to mess with power play one, which has been very good for the Rangers for the vast majority of the season, besides that one little slump that they had, I don't think you're messing with power play one, which means I think you need to have one right-handed shot at least on power play two, and Gallant very much seems to favor Trouba in that role. He hasn't really been rewarded for it, but I've had guys on the team tell me this. When Trouba's winding up for one of those big slap shots, not many people in the league want to jump in front of that. So I think they like at least having that threat on the second power play unit. And that's why I kind of don't think it's going to change unless, let's say, the Rangers make a trade and bring in a guy who's another right-handed option. All right, let's get to our final question of the week, which comes from @Kreidquist, who wrote, rank the New York Rangers bromances. Now, this is an interesting question. I think if we're doing a top three, let's say, the top two spots are obvious. Number one, hands down, is Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider. Those guys, I think more so than any two athletes I've seen, certainly more so than any two athletes I've been around, love each other, support each other, do everything for each other. I mean, we saw Kreider on the final day for breakup day last season after the Rangers had been knocked out of the playoffs, and Kreider was so emotional, and he wanted Mika to be there in the room with him to sort of keep him calm and be his support system. It's a different level with those two, and the way that they're brutally honest with each other, the way that they push each other to be better, the way that they're always just around each other and hugging, and their lockers are right next to each other. And I was actually joking with Kaapo Kakko about this earlier today, just a little tease on a story that I might have coming. Kakko was like, you know, I'm starting to feel more comfortable with those guys, but those two guys, man, they do everything together. So I would definitely have to put Zibanejad and Kreider in the number one spot. Number two, I think, is also an easy one. It has to be Adam Fox and Ryan Lindgren. Those guys are no longer roommates. They were for the previous two plus seasons, but they still are absolutely
if not best friends, very, very close friends, still have lockers right next to each other, still are constantly talking and joking around with each other. And I know that those guys are very, very fond of each other. And obviously you see the partnership on the ice. So Fox Lindgren would be my second choice. The third choice, though, in the past, last year, obviously it would have been Artemi Panarin and Ryan Strome. Strome has moved on. So now I think there's a lot of candidates. This is kind of an interesting one. I would definitely think about Artemi Panarin and Igor Shesterkin. Obviously, they have the Russian connection. Those guys are always joking around with each other and making each other laugh. I also think about Keandre Miller and Jacob Trouba. We talked about the defensive pairs, but there's sort of a big brother, younger brother thing between those two. I think Keandre very much goes to Trouba for advice, whether it's hockey stuff or life stuff. He talks about Trouba all the time, being a guy that he looks up to and tries to model himself after, and has been huge as far as getting him comfortable as an NHL player. So that's one for sure. I know Alexi Lafreniere and Sammy Blais are really tight. They have that French-Canadian connection going, and I know those guys are very good friends. I know Ryan Reeves and Barclay Gaudreau are really tight. I think that those guys bonded a lot last year, and I think they drive to the rink together a lot and stuff like that. So those guys are really cool for sure. An emerging one, and I touched on this a little bit, is Braden Schneider and Zach Jones. Those guys have lockers now positioned next to each other. I know they were living in the same hotel for a while, and I think they are both still living very close to each other. And it's been kind of striking to me. I was joking around with them about this a week or so ago. They're like the dynamic duo. It seems like everything around the practice facility those two guys are doing together. So Schneider and Jones is one that, if you're making a chart right now, is definitely trending up. But finally, and this is a good little way for me to segue into mentioning a story that I wrote this week that I'm really excited about how it came out, and I hope everybody gets a chance to check out, a sleeper bromance that is definitely coming more to the forefront recently is Alexi Lafreniere and Ryan Lindgren. So listen, you got some dynamics here, because we just talked about how tight Lindgren is with Fox. Obviously, I think Fox is his best friend on the team, but Lafreniere and Lindgren recently moved into the same apartment building. Not the same apartment, they're not roommates, but they have separate units. They said they're a floor apart, and they're driving to the rink every day together. They're watching sports with each other all the time. They're eating probably more meals with each other than anybody else. I notice them all the time talking about which card games they're going to play on the planes and things like that. And so I wrote this story actually about Lafreniere, because I've talked to you guys a little bit about the locker room access coming back this year and how refreshing that's been, and how it's given me a chance to get to know guys on a level and in a way that we weren't able to the last couple seasons due to the COVID-19 restrictions. Well, one guy that had kind of struck me maybe more than anybody else that I had never really had the chance to just sit down and talk to and get to know is Alexi Lafreniere, because he came into the league while COVID was going on. So finally now back in there, and I've had a few little chats with him, but last week I was like, hey, you know, I haven't really had a chance to just pick your brain and get a feel for what makes you tick and where you came from and what you're all about. And so we sat at the locker for like 10 minutes or so and had a really good conversation. And one of the things that was revealed in that conversation was how much Ryan Lindgren has been sort of taking him under his wing and helping him, and how much time they've been spending together recently. So I talked to Lindgren, talked to a few other people who know Alexi pretty well, and wrote a story that went up on loha.com/sports/Rangers for Wednesday morning. It's a subscriber-only story, so you do need to subscribe to read that one. It's only $1 to subscribe for, I think, still 6 months, so that's a pretty good deal. I hope you would consider if you're not already a subscriber, and very much thank you, as always, to those who already do. But yeah, really cool story. Very happy with how it came out. I think it gives a lot of tidbits into what Lafreniere is like behind the scenes, his upbringing, the type of things that he likes to do off the ice, and also his goals and the things that he's aiming to do on the ice, and how he's dealing with the pressure of being a number one pick, all that stuff. So we'll leave it on that, with that Lindgren-Lafreniere bromance kind of emerging right now, and that story that I wrote that gets into some detail on that, which is up for anybody to read anytime moving forward. So definitely check that one out if you get a chance. With that, That is going to do it for this week's episode. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous day out, and it looks like we're going to have a few of these in a row. So I think I might edit this podcast while sitting outside. I hope you guys get a chance to enjoy it as well. Hope you guys are enjoying the hockey. Interesting game coming up on Thursday night against Boston, so I'll definitely have full coverage from that one. I'll be back next week with a new episode. Until then, be well, stay safe. Thanks to all of you who listen, and of course, all of you who submit questions, and I will talk to you guys next time.